Kaffee in seiner besten Form mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo. In jeder Cubo-Kapsel steckt Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Für Espresso, Kaffeecrema oder Kaffee Grande auf Knopfdruck. Die neue Cubo One überzeugt mit Premium-Design, kompakter Größe und kleinem Einstiegspreis ab 29 Euro. Dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie wird jede Tasse besonders aromatisch mit samtiger Crema. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Stu does America.
Follow the show on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to subscribe and hit the bell for notifications. Jason Buttrell is here with the latest on Trump's ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Hakeem Jeffries gets put in his place following a grandstanding speech on the Hill. We'll get to that. We start by doing peace in the Middle East? Seriously? What an amazing day. I don't know where else to start, honestly, by, you know, we talk about a day like this where you have such incredible developments, things that are making seemingly almost everybody happy. I mean, there's a few holdouts, of course, but everyone's pretty much happy about this. Of course, I'm talking about the Toronto Blue Jays defeating the New York Yankees. Oh, God, I loved it so much. I kept wanting to really go crazy on Twitter and just keep tweeting over and over and over again. I did a couple times about my Toronto Blue Jays, America's team. And then I did kind of realize that maybe some people in my audience may be a little more interested in peace in the Middle East. I don't know. I don't know how that happens. I feel like it's Blue Jays win and also peace in the Middle East, which is great. Both are great equally, or maybe the Blue Jays are a little bit more important. But I will say, While no one really cares, obviously, about whether the Blue Jays win other than me, as America's only Toronto Blue Jays fan, probably. But I will say, pretty uniting to beat the Yankees. Lots of people that I don't normally get messages from making sure they reached out to say thank you to my team for their incredible victory and getting the Yankees out of there. So we got that going on, which is nice. I guess there was a secondary development yesterday, something about Israel and Gaza and maybe the war ending and Trump brokering peace. I don't know, something like that. I will say, leftists should be thanking Trump for this. And of course, everyone should be thanking the Toronto Blue Jays. Now, I will say, unlike the Toronto Blue Jays, that series is over. The Yankees are done, at least for this season. This one isn't done yet. We can look at this and be really hopeful. And that's the right place to be really hopeful and optimistic. Maybe something can come of this, but there are a lot of pitfalls ahead. These two groups, Hamas and Israel, don't really trust each other all that much. And the fact that an agreement has been made, you just don't know how long it's going to hold on. The most likely outcome, to be clear here, the most likely outcome is that this, at some point, falls apart. And it sucks, but it's just the truth. I mean, it's the most likely thing. That doesn't mean we have to sit here and say, well, it has to be that way. We can, of course, hope and pray for the best. And honestly, if we can at least get past the next few days and these hostages get released, anything that happens after that could be bad, could be rough, could be bumpy, whatever, but at least these people will be home. At least the families won't be worried about this anymore. And I will say, we certainly at this point believe the American hostages are no longer alive, but there are American hostages here. And the fact that, you know, even their remains being handed over is something for at least to give a little bit of closure to these families here in America. And, you know, who knows? Who knows what can happen out of all of that? This is whether this falls apart or not, it's important to understand this is a hell of an accomplishment for Donald Trump. And it's not just about Donald Trump. It's, of course, as I think he would, you know, he would probably at least note, maybe with a couple of jokes attached to it, that this is even bigger than him. This is a much bigger thing than him. And this is something that he really believes in. There are certain things that Donald Trump kind of says. He gets on bandwagons on. He'll go down certain roads. And then there are certain things he really believes in. He certainly really believes in tariffs. He certainly really believes in border security. And he really believes in trying to end these wars whenever it's possible. He doesn't like that this is happening. He is a very pro-Israel guy. He has a really consistent record on that, going back to the first term. And in fact, in the first term, really launching a foundation that made any of this possible. I mean, you think of the Abraham Accords, which I've told you 100 times going back to the very beginning of the show in 2020, that he's not getting enough credit for this. This is one of this, I believe, his greatest achievement in office in the first term. And I believe this kind of, you know, looks at a situation where this is his strongest issue. The Israel issue and the surrounded everything that surrounds that, I believe, has been his strong point. And I might have said the border before this, but I mean, I think honestly, consistently from first to second term, I think the border, he's been great in the second term. First term, he was okay. I think with Israel, he's been really good in both terms. And that's not a thing that most presidents even begin to manage well. It's an incredible achievement, and it's not something that we should just like scoff off. Oh, well, he's only Donald Trump, and you know the media is going to say he's just, you know, looking out for himself or whatever they're going to say here. Whatever the cause, his approach, as I mentioned a few days ago, the approach, actually, I guess it's a couple of weeks now, the approach of coming out and saying with Netanyahu, hey, we've agreed. Now he's got to go to Hamas, make sure they're on board for this. When he did that, he put the ball into Hamas's court in a way that they couldn't deny. What are they going to do? They're going to say no to the peace deal that's already been agreed to? They can do that, but the consequences were clear, and they would lose a lot of sympathy from their backers in these places when something's already on the table. Israel's on board, because the way that this was handled up until this point was to just say Israel will never stop. They want to kill all the Palestinians, so they're never going to stop. This was not true. It never was true, but it was somewhat believable to a lot of people, including a lot of American Jews who looked at this and said, hey, you know, they just keep going and they're never going to be satisfied. Well, honestly, the second that they heard they were getting their hostages back and there was a plan to get Hamas out of power, they were satisfied. As they said they would be this entire time, by the way. So believe them if you want, but this is the way this was going for a long time. Hamas needed to at least come on board to give these hostages back. We will see on Monday or Tuesday whether this is actually real. It's supposed to happen. We're hearing now on Monday. I would not be surprised at all if it either doesn't happen or if it just gets delayed a few days as they're trying to hash out these agreements. One of the big things that's going to happen here is a, if you want to call it a prisoner exchange. I don't like that term because then you're equating essentially the Jewish hostages that were taken hostage from Israel and were tortured and in some cases murdered for nothing. And you're equating them with actual terrorists that have been captured by Israel, that Israel is going to release criminals and terrorists. And it's going to be probably 10, 20, 30, 50, 100 to 1 in a ratio. But that is the way this always works for whatever reason. And we're supposed to be okay with that. I don't understand why exactly, but that's the way this works. All right. Trump hails Israel-Hamas ceasefire hostage deal for Gaza. Here's the statement he gave out. I am very proud to announce that Israel and Hamas have both signed off on the first phase of our peace plan. First phase, very key term there. This means that all of the hostages will be released very soon and Israel would withdraw their troops to an agreed upon line as the first steps towards a strong, durable and everlasting peace. All parties will be treated fairly. This is a great day for the Arab and Muslim world, Israel, all surrounding nations, and the United States of America. We thank the mediators from Qatar, from Egypt, and Turkey, who worked with us to make this historic and unprecedented event happen. Blessed are the peacemakers. Donald J. Trump, President of the United States of America. Now, there's been some agreement on this from even Palestinian sources like the Palestinian Authority. President Abbas welcomes President Trump's announcement on a ceasefire agreement in Gaza. They go on and on and on, frankly. I know too many words from I have no faith in the Palestinian Authority either, so I'm just going to skip that. But I was excited that, you know, this is a moment, right? When you have a moment like this, you look to see how people react to it. When there's a big moment and the reaction should be pretty obvious, the people who can't hit that reaction standard are normally kind of giving themselves away as just terrible, terrible people. John Fetterman, I think, did this the right way. And we bring this up a lot. Fetterman's pretty good on this issue. Again, he's a liberal. He's not a guy that I would like in the Senate. I think he still has many, many problems, but he does seem to be an actual human being. Which is nice. It's just nice to have people out there that will occasionally say, you know, I'm glad a good thing happened to our country. That's what he said. I congratulate POTUS on the historic peace plan that releases all the hostages. Now, enduring peace in the region is possible. Our parties are different, but we've shared ironclad commitment to Israel and its people. And you look at this, I mentioned first phase. The historic peace is possible. These are terms that are necessary here because of all the things. I mean, remember, Donald Trump had a 20-point plan that he and Israel and Netanyahu agreed to. We're at the first phase of this, the hostages being the biggest part in Israel stepping back and starting a ceasefire. These are the biggest first parts of this. I expect Israel to hit these standards. Hamas, I don't know. I frankly don't know if they're going to hit these standards. They're not. This is a terrorist organization. So will they? I don't know. I think there's a possibility of it, but I think in that possibility, when you think of all the moving parts, is at some level remote. But, you know, miracles happen. And I think that's what we have to be rooting for and praying for here. The situation, I think, with the reaction will separate sort of the shills from the actual human beings. Because if you can sit back and recognize that this is a good thing, if you can say, hey, Donald Trump, thank you. Great job. Great job on this thing. I disagree with you on taxes. I disagree with you on abortion. But hey, this is a great job. He does seem to really care about this. And I think if you can't see that, you're probably blinded by your rage and your TDS. We saw the same line, I think, drawn after Charlie Kirk's assassination. If you can't step back and say, gosh, that was a terrible thing, and we need to really make sure that this doesn't happen again. If you can't get there and instead your reaction is to be happy or say, sure, it's bad, but he was evil, you know, you're revealing something about yourself. You're not revealing anything about Charlie Kirk. You're not revealing anything about Israel or Hamas. You're revealing something about yourself in that situation. President Obama gave a decent statement. He said we should all be encouraged and relieved that an end to Gaza could be in sight. Again, he's not going to give any credit to Donald Trump, even though he knows he tried to do this and failed. He knows how difficult it is. I'm not going to give credit to Trump per se, but still at least noted that it was a positive development. Vladimir Putin is also now praising this moment. He says he's hopeful for the future. Donald Trump says he will address Israel's parliament if he's invited, which it does seem like he will be to address parliament there. So the Knesset. This is kind of the reaction of the media. A stunning achievement for Trump and for Netanyahu, provided it holds. And, you know, one of the reasons to hope here, because I keep giving you the disclaimer, and I got to give the disclaimer, that all disclaimers apply today, that I'm not going to come out here and celebrate, because tomorrow could be the opposite. I don't want Vladimir Guerrero Jr. going on television and celebrating the Yankees' demise before the series is won. Afterward, great. Him saying, duh, Yankee lose over and over again was one of my favorite things I've ever seen in my entire life. That being said, you do that after the series is over. And I would warn my lovely Toronto Blue Jays, the season's not over yet. Don't get too celebratory. Get more series to win here. You're two series away from a championship and they're winnable. So just keep that focus. It's okay to have a little celebration. And that's where we are with the peace deal. Have the celebration. Be excited about this. Realize there's more work to do. And one of the reasons why you can have a little bit of optimism here is if you think about, I was reading the October 7th documents earlier today. These are the plan for October 7th was one of the things I was reading. Handwritten notes on what's going on from Sinmore. And one of the things they talked about was intentionally going into these areas and taking and burning down villages, murdering children, butchering, beheading. They mentioned all of this in their notes. This wasn't something that like a bunch of Hamas people got over there and got excited because they really don't like Jews and started doing terrible things and filmed it. And they're like, no, don't film it. We don't want anyone to see that. The filming it, the presenting it to the people was part of the handwritten notes for the plan. That was the idea here. They wanted to be as brutal and awful and terrible as possible to scare Israelis, to eventually, draw a giant response so that they could wind up in a situation where Israel had the world turn against them. These were all things they thought about beforehand. So looking at this and saying, how is this going to be, how are we optimistic for the future? Well, part of that is Israel did respond, and they took out so many leaders of Hamas that we're not dealing with the A team here. We're not dealing with the B team here. We're like on the E team. Okay, we're way down the list. These are a lot of people that, you know, unlike Sinwar, who had the type of ideological and fanatical religious idea that to commit to this act in the first place and then want to broadcast it to everybody. Some of these people, while they aren't good people, I'm not excited about the leadership of Hamas, but like they might be a little more open to getting the hell out of town, right? Like, I would be a little more open to, I don't know. I never was supposed to be in the leadership of this organization. I just wanted to park cars at the valet. Those guys might not be as excited about getting murdered in the streets with their families as some of the original guys were. And that's a positive. There's, at least gives you a chance for success. Of course, I read some of the New York Times coverage, and some of it was fine. They don't want to give Trump any credit. That's at least not very often, although they couldn't avoid all of it. This piece was called As Israelis Breathe a Sigh of Relief. Some ask why a deal took so long. I don't know. Hamas didn't agree to it. We've had plenty of peace deals on the table. Hamas kept saying no. They kept not releasing hostages. When the hostages get released, this is going to go forward pretty quickly. I mean, it's laughable. How do you not know the answer to that? Gosh, Israelis are asking, why? Why did it take so long? I don't know. Did anyone bother to ask Hamas if they want a ceasefire? They keep firing. They keep brutalizing their people. They keep brutalizing these hostages. They're not releasing the hostages. That's why it took so long. But that is kind of the situation there. Despite the general sense of exhilaration, some Israelis expressed frustration that it had taken their government so long to reach this point. What's interesting here is the next sentence, boys and girls. They can't, I mean, I guess they could have left this out, but they didn't. The quote is, there should be no doubt this deal came about solely because of President Trump. This comes from Yehuda Cohen, father of Nimrod Cohen, a 21-year-old soldier held in Gaza, and she told an Israeli TV channel this on Thursday. It's a big development. It's really hard to avoid the fact that Trump was integral to this and probably crucial to the point of making the entire situation a mirage, a dream, you know, a pipe dream if it wasn't for his work in this particular area. Gazans are joining Israelis in chanting Trump's name over ceasefire. Nobel Prize to Trump. I mean, this has got to be infuriating to the left to have to deal with this. And I think you're seeing a lot of people on the left, again, not people like Fetterman, who is on the left, but I think you're seeing a lot of people on the left say, kind of hoping that this falls apart, right? It'll be easy for them to say, oh gosh, yeah, sure, he tried, but it was never a real effort in the first place. It's already fallen apart after 3 weeks or whatever the answer is. They're secretly hoping that this falls apart. And of course, they're also looking for some justification. How can this man, who I've called Hitler, first of all, it's so weird how much he protects the Jews for Hitler. It's just a weird, he's not very good at being Hitler. I will tell you that. But this guy who we've called Hitler, who we've said is the worst person in the world, who we've always told you has the worst intent, always wants bad things. How can we explain this? How can we explain these efforts? How can we explain that he seems to be doing something because he believes he wants wars to end? How do we explain our entire worldview going out the window? Well, this is one way they're attempting it. Here is a noted expert, Chris Hayes.
There was a deal that was sort of jointly negotiated by the outgoing Biden administration, the incoming Trump administration. That was also multiple phases. The first phase was the release of some hostages, a cessation of bombing. That never got to phase two the first time around. Instead, the war continued after that. So your point is well taken. Do you think there's a role? Do you worry that Trump wants to get the Nobel Prize on Friday? Sort of, I mean, I really don't mean that as a joke. I mean, the Hamas negotiators even talked to DropSite, which has been doing reporting on this, on the record, saying they know that the Nobel Peace Prize matters, that there's some desire to get something done that may not then endure in the medium term.
I was talking to Diane, your producer, right before the show, and I said Kissinger got the Nobel Peace Prize and Gandhi didn't. So I'm not sure how much the Nobel Peace Prize means, fair but point. It means a lot to Donald Trump.
Right. See, this is the way you explain it. It's just he's being selfish, right? Donald Trump wants his trophy, the Nobel Peace Prize. He wants to be recognized for that, and that's the only reason he's really going for this. If that's true, and so what if it's, even if it were true, which I don't think it is. I mean, over and over and over again, this is what Trump has shown himself to be when it comes to foreign policy. He wants to do everything possible to avoid this stuff. He does not want to go into war. He does not want to be that guy. He's done specific strikes on specific people in specific times. but he is not for widespread war. He wants it to be over. I mean, it adds a bunch of uncertainty to your presidency. How do you get all these things done that you want to get done if you're constantly dealing with stuff like this? And I really do believe he thought he could come into office. And I mean, he always said, end the war in day one in Ukraine. I don't think he thought he could do that. But I do think he thought he could get Putin to come to the table and get this thing over with within a few months. I do think that hasn't worked so far there. But his efforts were sincere there. He really wants it over. And I think the same is true here in Israel. He really wants to be the guy who was able to step up and say, you know what? Take all these conditions, this craziness that we've been talking about forever, these two parties that have been warring it back and forth forever, throw all the crap out the window. Let's just get this done. It's pretty impressive, honestly. And he's been incredibly effective. The Trumpian nature of it, to kind of come out and agree with Netanyahu first and put all the pressure on to Hamas, that is Donald Trump. That's all it is. That's not any other president. It's not George W. Bush. It's not Ronald Reagan. It's not any of these guys. The way he handles this is different than those other guys. Those other guys, some of them did really good things. Some of them maybe be able to push things along a little bit, but they handled things differently. And he's able to kind of toss away a lot of baggage because he's very transactional, honestly. And I think that is part of it. But in this case, really, really positive. By the way, Zelensky is out talking about this. He says, if Trump gives us tomahawks, we'll lobby for a Nobel Peace Prize. The plan for ending the war won't be easy, but is certainly the way forward. And if Trump gives the world, above all, the Ukrainian people, the chance for such a ceasefire, then yes, he should be nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. We will nominate him on behalf of Ukraine. Can you imagine how annoying this is going to be for the left? Can you imagine them they're going to have to say, I mean, their first answer, you kind of got a hint of there. Nobel Prize. Gandhi didn't even get one. Only, you know, Kissinger got one. This isn't a real award. The Nobel Peace Prize? Stop. Amazing. I will say on this one, and I hope you know this. I think you know it by now. If Trump does something that I don't like, I'm going to be critical of Trump. And he's not perfect. He does things that I don't like. He does things that I do like, and I praise him for that. I've got really no notes for this one. This is pretty much unequivocal praise. Now, that doesn't mean that this is going to work out. It doesn't mean everything turns out well in the end and Palestinians and Jews are having, they're hanging out and they're having coffee and, you know, they're playing bridge together. I don't know if that it ends that way. Probably not. It's a good chance that it falls apart. But these are sincere efforts and he's gotten the ball down the field as far as anybody else and probably a lot farther. This is a significant achievement. And the fact that he's attempting these things, it's worth it. We're talking about human lives. And sometimes people put up barriers around these things and say, gosh, I don't know. We're never going to get there. Why even bother trying? And his answer constantly is, let's give it a whirl. I'm not embarrassed. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Let's go for it. And that is a really positive characteristic of Donald Trump. And I've got no notes for him whatsoever. Also, I have no notes for the Toronto Blue Jays, who can continue celebrating their victory for another 24 hours or so, and then they should get back to thinking about how they're going to defeat either the Seattle Mariners or the Detroit Tigers. Look, you might not care about the Toronto Blue Jays. You probably do care about Middle East peace. I can't guarantee I'll talk more about Middle East peace than the Toronto Blue Jays going forward, but if the Blue Jays lose, you'll get much more Middle East peace talk than you can handle. Life is lived in these small, perfect moments. Maybe a really interesting audiobook or a call that you can't miss from someone you love you haven't heard from in a while. Maybe music that makes your run or your drive home a little bit better. And Raycon's anniversary collection is built to make every one of those moments sound as good as they feel. These are earbuds that pack active noise cancellation that's just fantastic for when you need to focus. They have multi-point connectivity, so your phone and your laptop can share a single pair. That's a great feature, too, by the way. When you're like listening to music on your headphones and you're on your laptop and you see a video you need to listen to, It just connects right away. You don't have to keep, like, you don't have to go into the Bluetooth settings and do all that other nonsense. It's got an ergonomic fit that actually stays put when you move. The fit of the Raycons is always the thing I think people praise first. And it's a design that looks great as well. Quick charging gives you 90 minutes after just 10 minutes on the charger. The pocket case gives you hours of total playtime, so you don't spend your day hunting for an outlet. Awareness mode lets you hear traffic or talk without pausing your playlist, and behind the product is real support, a straightforward guarantee, the customer service team that actually answers your questions. For their anniversary, Raycon is celebrating with special offers and fresh colors, which makes now a very smart time to upgrade the way you listen. Go to buyraycon.com/stew. Buyraycon.com/stew. Get 20% off the everyday earbuds today with their special deal. It's buyraycon.com, buyraycon.com/stew. Get 20% off Everyday Earbuds Classic. This is sponsored, of course, by Raycon.
Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
Right now, I'm Jason Buttrell, head writer and researcher for Glenn Beck. Jason, as I laid out a minute ago, this is a big deal. Like, this is a big day when it comes to Middle East peace. And this is, I think, quite an achievement for Donald Trump and the Trump administration. I don't know. Give me your 50,000 foot view on it.
Well, let's just start there. I mean, the achievement is absolutely insane. And no matter what side of the ball you're on here, whether you're on the Palestinian side or you're on the Israeli side, you can look at what Donald Trump did and say he was probably pretty much equally hard on both sides. He was tough. I don't say hard. He was tough on both sides. Mm-hmm. He was tough on the Israelis. He didn't let them do certain things they wanted to do, pushed them in other directions. And he gave, you know, Hamas, you know, the ultimatum. You know, he gave them both pretty much very hard words that they probably didn't, that neither of them wanted. It was absolutely within Israel's right to go into Gaza and stay there, to occupy indefinitely. They had the means, they could do it, and it was in their right to do it after October 7th. Mm-hmm. But that's not what happened, and Trump was able to secure this deal, and it is historic if it plays out the way we want it to.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of questions over the next months and years, and then there's a longer-term question, too, as to whether this provides the sort of security arrangement that Israel can actually live with. And in this case, I mean literally live with. Like, can they actually stay alive when this happens? You know, your hopes are high. We don't know how this thing works out. But, like, why have other presidents not been able to do this? Like, why is this something that only Donald Trump has been able to pull off?
That's a very good question. I think that the huge calamity or calamitous misstep by Hamas really kind of pushed this towards its finality. There was such a the only way I can describe it as a misstep from Hamas's side. Hamas, and I was actually in Israel on October 7th last year for the anniversary. Mm. Got to talk to a lot of people, including some military people and some Assad people. And they were talking about, they had communications and they had both written and audio that showed that Hamas expected this to be the event that ignited another, like, you know, 6-day war type scenario, mm-hmm. where multiple countries joined in the fight to attack Israel. They thought they were kicking it off, and they were probably, well, they absolutely were thinking that because they were all in coordination with, you know, nations like Iran, all of their proxies. This was the plan, you know, to come in from, you know, Lebanon, Hezbollah was going to join in, Iranian proxy militias, IRGC, they were all going to attack Israel from every side at some point. Hamas jumped the gun and did it too early. And nobody else was willing to jump in and, you know, and join this war with Hamas because, you know, look what happened. Everyone knew that was that was the end result. They were going to get decimated. And Hamas let themselves open. And now they're no longer going to be an organization going forward. A big key thing that's about to happen is the hostages. Maybe I'll start right with that, with this deal. When the hostages, both alive and dead, get turned over to Israel, which is supposed to happen within the next couple of days, on Monday, I believe, if that does happen, Hamas just lost all of the rest of their leverage. They have zero leverage at that point. They're supposed to get some people back, some of their people.
Yeah, a lot. And of course, as always, a lot more. And people that were in jail for terrible, terrible crimes, not hostages, but criminals.
Right.
Many of them.
But they're also supposed to, as per the agreement, supposed to completely demilitarize.
Yeah.
So they're going to have no arms. They're going to have no leverage, no nothing. So they're going to be, and this is where it's going to start getting interesting, is they're going to be one of the random militias that are within the Gaza area, which is not a large area, that are going to be vying for some kind of, I don't know, authority or some kind of protection amongst all the other groups that are there. One of the other groups, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, PIJ, they're another Iranian-backed militia that are there. They're still there. They're going to be armed in some way. Multiple other groups, but they're all going to be fighting over who gets humanitarian aid, who wants to be the ones that are seen delivering, you know, and facilitating some of this aid. So now it's going to become not an issue of the Israelis are attacking Gaza. This is not, you know, the West or the United States or Trump, you know, green lighting some of these attacks and all of, you know, so Israel can't be blamed. We can't be blamed. But now this is going to be a Palestinian fight where they're essentially killing each other, fighting each other just for, you know, someone to rise up and become, I don't know, the authority there. A lot of turbulent times are coming, I'm predicting for this. And a lot of people, I think, will just, you know, that live in Gaza will probably just choose to get the heck out of there.
I would.
Some of the border crossings are opening back up. We know that other Arab nations typically don't like accepting people from the Palestinians from Gaza. They don't like them to come into their countries.
Right, that is true.
I'm sure that there will be some deals that are worked out so some of them can leave.
But that does seem to be part of this, right? Like, I think the part that's maybe most fascinating to me is the difference in the way these countries are participating, right? Like, part of this agreement says there can be, Hamas members can basically choose to be exported to a third country. There's a list of countries on that board. And then also the fact that these countries have decided they're going to participate in some sort of peacekeeping managerial force, if you will, inside of Gaza. Yeah. Like, the fact that those countries are willing to work with Israel and that Israel trusts them enough to allow people with guns from these countries that have attacked them before on to their land to manage the situation. Again, that's something that was built foundationally during the first Trump administration with the Abraham Accords, and it's continuing now. I mean, I think it might be the biggest part of all of this.
Trust them as far as until they break the agreement, and then there's always the threat that Israel can finish what it started. Mm-hmm. And they all know that Israel very well can finish what they started. And none of them want that. They want to turn Gaza into some kind of economic zone. That's what I'm thinking. I think, as you point out, many of the Abraham Accord nations getting involved, heavily involved in some of the investment and rebuilding and all that is going to be great. What it cannot end up being, there's two things that it cannot end up being at the end of this. For one, it cannot end up being another staging point to surround and later attack Israel. It cannot ever be that again. Second thing it cannot get, in my opinion, is ever become anything close to the quote-unquote two-state solution. It cannot happen. And in the 20-point plan, it mentions, I think near the end, during maybe 18, 19, 20, somewhere in about them being on the path to one day becoming, you know, their own state. Well, they've been on that path. That language has been used since the 40s.
Right.
In my opinion, it's never going to happen.
I don't think it should.
I don't think it should either, but it definitely shouldn't happen now.
Yes.
You don't reward these people with a state of their own after what they did on October 7th. They don't deserve it.
Especially when they got sort of a trial at this whole process. They got a chance to kind of determine their own future
and they used it to elect Hamas into leadership when, you know, Israel was out of the region. Like, they were like, all right, you guys do your own thing. Just don't bother us. And don't bother us turned into October 7th.
Yeah, they did this to themselves. Absolutely. There's video of them now, multiple people in the streets praising Hamas for the peace that now are happening, that is now happening, which is an incredible, just what the heck are you even looking at to come to that conclusion? But this is going to be a generational thing. This is that's what's kind of exciting about this, is if it continues to go forward, which it can, because now Hamas has been, they're giving over their leverage. They're completely neutered as far as what kind of, you know, power they can enforce, because they have none anymore. They're going to be demilitarized. I'm hoping most armed groups there will be demilitarized. And if we can get outside nations like the Arab Gulf nations that can come in, turn it more into an economic zone with different schools, you can change, you know, the things they're teaching in some of these schools. Have you seen some of the textbooks that Hamas was destroyed? I mean, they committed so much damage to generations upon generations of people that they believe, you know, Israel's the ultimate bad guy and Hamas are the saviors of the world. That's got to change, but it's not going to happen overnight. But the cool thing, though, is that they're actually on a path to have that change, which we have not had in decades, especially under the Biden administration. They didn't do anything on this. Nope. It's like they didn't even try.
So what does this mean to the region overall? Like, you know, obviously this particular conflict is a big part of the strife and the chaos of the region generally, but there's always something going on over there. What does this mean for the future?
Yeah, well, the Iranian Sunni Shia split, that's not, you know, fixing anytime soon.
Yeah.
The good thing about, you know, initiatives like the Paris, or the, I'm not Paris Accords, the Abraham Accords, is that they started changing, you know, the outlook on a lot, like, at least economically, travel, relations were getting warmer towards some of these nations. I expect a lot more of those to jump on. What happens is you start alienating, you know, countries like Iran, more and more extreme nations, they get pushed off further and further towards the side. That's a very good thing. So that creates stability and multiple other places, Iraq, even Yemen, places like that, more stability will start coming. Plus, you know, the Palestinian cause, especially in places like Gaza, has always been used to inflame a lot of the militant groups. And a lot of these Gulf Arab countries are kind of held hostage by a lot of these militant groups. They don't know what to do. They won't say anything publicly in support of Israel. They always say it in secret. But nothing in publicly because they're afraid of their own fundamentalists and radicals. So I think that, you know, if they can change the entire narrative and the story within Gaza, that this is a new economic zone. It's for the people that decided to remain there. It's going to be something great going forward. And it's not an away from, well, it's Israel and it's occupied area and blah, 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 that stupid bull crap. As soon as that starts dying down, as education in places like Gaza starts dying down, that I think this could lead more and more to, as I don't even want to say like peace in the Middle East, because that's never going to be fully realized, but a more peaceful Middle East that has the ability to last a long time if we can get through these next crucial few weeks.
And of course, you got to watch that. I keep coming back to the idea that Israel does need to be careful here to not get so excited about the prospect of quote unquote peace that they allow themselves to be put back in that situation. Because I think, you know, what we see out of the October 7th attacks, other than just Hamas being, you know, violent barbarians, is a country that lets guard down. And, you know, like, this buffer zone can't be big enough for me. And there should be a dead zone where nobody lives and nobody crosses. That's not, I'm not talking about a fence and a couple feet on each side of it. I'm talking miles of nobody goes anywhere near it. They need to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Yeah.
And I hope that's on the top of their list.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, I mean, you look at the what's considered legitimate, you know, governorship or whatever in this area is the Palestinian Authority.
Right.
And if you know anything about their origins, that they were the terrorists of the day, the PLO. I mean, now we don't even remember that anymore, but that's what they were. They got legitimized. Now they call themselves a Palestinian Authority, but I'm not putting much trust in those guys.
No.
If they ever want to like say, okay, now we control Gaza too, okay, red light, things are not going the way we think they're going.
Right, and all this is going to happen, you know, over the next few weeks and months. Jason Buttrell, head writer and researcher of Glenn Beck's program. I appreciate it, Jason. Thanks for coming on and explaining all of this to us.
You bet.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Well, the Democrats have put their noodles together. They decided it's time. They're going to really use those noggins. And they're going to try to figure out something very, very difficult. DNC's briefed top Democrats on the audit of the 2024 White House loss. What exactly did they find? Late spending, exacerbated by a mid-battle candidate switch. Do you remember that from the election? They apparently, during the election, switched candidates. And lack of attention to voters' top concerns. There's something. That's a difficult one. That's why they lost. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, when you have an entire primary and then you just eject the guy because he's got Alzheimer's, it's going to probably cost you a little bit in the election. And then, you know, kind of compounding that with the idea that you're not actually addressing any of your voters' concerns, probably part of the problem. Of course, you know, that's not going to change anything Hakeem Jeffries does. He's just going to keep going down with the same talking points no matter what. He was confronted by Mike Lawler, representative from New York, in the hallway. And that's here's how this went down.
Did you get permission from your boss?
Why don't we sign off right now?
Did your boss, Donald Trump?
You can easily extend the ACA right now.
Did your boss, Donald Trump, give you permission?
Yes,
he is.
No, he's not. And by the way,
so let me ask you a
why
question.
Did you vote to
let
shut the government down?
You
why
know
did you vote to shut
let
it down?
Let me ask you a question.
For years, you always lectured about how we need to keep the government open.
You're making a show of this to make yourself relevant.
No, it's sad. You could easily sign on to this.
You're embarrassing yourself right now.
You can sign on to this. The only embarrassment here is you.
Okay, just goes on and on and on and on like this. But like, basically, what you're getting there is Lawler's trying to say, hey, sign on to this bill. We can end the shutdown. And two, he's trying to make actual points about the healthcare policy involved. Hakeem Jeffries is like, well, where's your boss, Donald Trump? You're embarrassing yourself. Where's your boss, Donald Trump? So really no actual news, I guess, comes out of that. And finally, we have Katie Porter, who is in trouble in her race. She was the favorite. She's no longer the favorite. Here she is abusing yet another staffer.
And I never have to go to the gas station.
That's awesome. And $632 is real money. And I know here at UCI, we have a National Fuel Center Research Center. If we don't electrify our transportation sector, that we're going to lose more than 500,000 Californians dying prematurely to air pollution and other problems. And the state could lose four. Get out of my shot.
I wanted to tell you that that's actually incorrect. It's not that it's electric vehicles. It's that if we don't meet the commitments under the Paris Climate Accord.
Okay. It does. Okay. You also were in my shot before that. Stay out of my shot. Okay. I'm going to start again with electric vehicles saving us money.
Yeah. The thing is, she's just so attractive that, like, you don't want to mess up a shot like that. She looks so good. You know, I think that's the main thing. You know, she keeps doing this. By the way, she was being corrected from a staffer because she made a massive error in what she was saying. That's the time you do step in, especially when it's not like a live interview. But this got leaked to Politico. Her candidacy continues to crumble. And I don't get it from the Democrat. I don't know why you'd protect her. She's obviously terrible. You can totally find somebody better than her. I assume they might try to move on, but so far, nothing on that front. When it's time to go, you better be ready to go. And you need the confidence to do such a thing, of course. And Blue Chew can help you with that confidence. It can help you be fully charged, steady, and ready for when life calls for it. Because let's be honest, every man has a moment where he feels off of his game. It happens. But thanks to Blue Chew, it's easier to get better back on track than ever before. There are no waiting rooms, there's no uncomfortable doctor visits, and no awkward pharmacy pickups. Everything happens online with licensed medical providers who guide you to the right chewable tablets for your needs. It's discreet, it's convenient, and it's shipped right to your door in plain packaging. Blue Chew fits the way men actually live today because confidence shouldn't be complicated. It should be there when you need it. Blue Chew helps you feel in control of the moment. And we've got a special deal going on right now for our listeners with Blue Chew. If you try Blue Chew, you get your first month of Blue Chew free when you use the promo code STEW at checkout. Pay $5 for shipping and that's it. The promo code is STEW. Visit BlueChew.com for more important details and safety information. It's BlueChew.com. The code is STEW. Okay, so here's what happened. I've been talking about the big news of the day, obviously the Toronto Blue Jays victory. And the secondary news of the day, peace in the Middle East. That has caused me to skip the even bigger news of the day, which is, of course, this. Nicole Kidman rocks breakup bangs and holds hands with both daughters at sexy Chanel appearance post-Keith Urban split. That AI headline is brought to you by ChatGPT. I love this headline because, first of all, I barely can understand what's occurring or why it would be told. But secondarily, this is just a word of warning when you're doing news stories and maybe doing parenting. When you're making a sexy appearance, probably don't bring your daughters. Try to keep sexy and daughters away from each other in headlines as much as possible.